Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. It has been 1 year since California's prisons closed to visitors. 214 people have died inside California's prisons, and more than 49,000 people have gotten COVID. This is according to data from the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. KALW operates its audio journalism program and makes the podcast Uncuffed at San Quentin and Solano State Prisons. Those two prisons had major COVID outbreaks. Uncuffed producer Chanton Bunn got COVID when he was incarcerated in San Quentin, but he was released in July, and he will join today's show to talk about his experience. Because of the pandemic, Uncuffed producers on the inside have not been able to access their radio equipment or their studio, so Uncuffed has been sharing audio letters from their loved ones, and we will hear from one during today's show. You can find more episodes and learn more about Uncuffed at yourcallradio.org. Joining us now is Eli Worthshafter, a director of Uncuffed, KALW's audio journalism project created by people inside San Quentin and Solano State Prisons. Uncuffed recently won the 2020 award from the Society of Professional Journalists, Northern California, for Best Community Journalism in Radio and Audio. Hi, Eli. Thank you so much for joining us, and huge congratulations to you and the team on this award.
Good morning, Rose. So great to talk to you. I miss you.
I know. I miss you too. I miss seeing you. It's great to have you.
Thanks.
We're
so
also
much.
Joined today by Chanton Bunn, producer with Uncuffed. Chanton served 23 years inside San Quentin for a crime he committed when he was 18. He was paroled on July 1st after contracting COVID inside the prison. He says he had chills, headaches, and a horrible cough. And when he got out, he thought he was heading to ICE detention because he's a refugee from Cambodia, but ICE did not pick him up. So for now, Chanton is free, and he is here with us to share his story. Hi, Chanton. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Nice to meet you.
Well, it's great to meet you. I hope we can meet in person. Maybe by the end of the year, we're hoping. Chanton, I first want to acknowledge those that we've lost to COVID inside all prisons. But here in California, according to the official data, 214 people have died. And I understand that you've tragically lost a couple of friends inside to COVID.
Yeah, I did. I lost two friends, Mac Brown and Eric Warner. Eric Warner was my cellmate for about 2 years, and he taught me a lot while I was there.
Can you tell us more about him?
Eric was an older gentleman. When I first arrived in San Quentin, I didn't know how to do anything there because I've never been in a prison like that. He actually took me into his cell because I was having problems with another cellmate that I was with, and showed me the ropes. He showed me how to get into college. He showed me how to get into self-help group. He showed me how to get a job. He showed me everything about rehabilitation, and led me through the right directions. And he was also a very helpful person. He was a legal bee, what they call it in there, inside a lawyer. So he needed to help everybody. He would sit there and explain to people's court papers. He would help them file petition. And a lot of people that knew him and that was with him and some of them are free because of him challenging their case and helping them out.
Wow. Chanton, can you speak a little closer to the microphone? You're a little low. Your audio is a little low.
Is that better now?
Yes, that's better. Thank you so much. Is there anything else you'd like to say, Chanton, just about, 214 people, this is the official number, sadly, of people who lost their lives to COVID inside California prisons.
A lot of times people don't really care about incarcerated people, and some people may look at it as, they did their crime, now they're paying, and with a pandemic, it's what they get. But a a lot of people that incarcerated right now, they're humans and they've changed for the better. They're community leaders within the side. They help the younger folks that go in there and help them learn a new life, you know, live a new life. Mac Brown was an older gentleman that he was in prison for, I believe, about 33 years. And I've learned so much about him, about history, about, you know, where he came from, and about just life. And I used to sit in his cell and talk to him all the time and have fun with him. The hard thing for me was, before I left, I couldn't say goodbye to him. When I left, the outbreak was starting and everybody was getting sick. All I could do was yell down there and say goodbye and I'll see you guys later before I walked out that door. With Eric, we talked before they locked us down, and he told me, he goes, if I get COVID, I think I'm going to die, or I'm going to be like really, really sick. And he from the start was always careful. He had two masks on all the time. But he was so positive. He would always say, blessings. Blessings I'm here. Blessings I'm alive. Blessing that I'm up today. And he was ready to go to the parole board. He was ready to travel the world with his brother. And he was ready for life. And Mac Brown, all he wanted to do was watch movies. That's all he wanted to do. He loved Westerns and he was ready to come home. And he said that all I want to do is get a horse, because he was a farrier. And I didn't even know what that was. And he said all he wanted to do was sit in the backyard and raise some horses. I remember those conversations with them. It's so beautiful.
Wow. You know, Eli, hearing Chanton talk about this makes me think that we're having a much needed discussion about the prison system, about the history of racism and prisons, about much needed reforms. But I think these personal stories are often missing. And, you know, Chanton just talking about the relationships that are created. I mean, what happens when you first get to prison and you don't have any idea how things operate? And when right. he first arrived, Eric showed him everything. And because of COVID, you know, these men who form these deep, deep friendships have not been able to say goodbye.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we try to do with Uncuffed, is to make sure those human stories are being told. And, you know, Bun, in just such a short time there, you know, revealed so much about these people's character and how vital they are to the community inside and how loved they are by their families on the outside. And, you know, a news report with a statistic can't ever capture that. And I'm just so grateful to Bun and all of our participants and anyone who's getting the word out about what their lives mean, because, you know, the personal cost of this will be ongoing and very lasting inside and outside.
And what would you like to say, Eli, given that you and the team have gotten to know so many people on the inside and their family members on the outside? And we just wanted to update our numbers that 215 people, these are official numbers, have tragically died inside prisons. You all have been on this for the last year. We had you on in the middle of COVID talking about right. what it was like. So just talk about, you know, what you'd like to say about these deaths and the importance of remembering people who died inside prison.
Wow. Well, I mean, obviously we've been really concerned for all our participants and all the people we've interacted with and the people whose stories we've told through the program, who we've never even got a chance to meet in person. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're experiencing is a piece of what all family members and loved ones on the outside are experiencing, which is that lack of contact. Today, March 11th marks the 1 year anniversary of CDCR, that's California State Prisons, closing to visitors. That includes family visits. That includes, I think all legal visits. And that includes visits from teachers and programs. And, you know, California was not alone in that by any means. All states have done that. And, you know, I think they're weighing the costs of the personal costs of doing that with the risks involved. But, you know, whatever the logic behind it, it's just been isolation on top of the isolation they already experience, not to have personal visits from teachers and family and friends. And so, you know, we've tried to keep up. We have kept up our communication with our participants through the mail largely. But obviously that's no substitute for being there in person. And of course, and our participants also haven't been able to go to the media center where they record the show until actually this week at Solano Prison for the first time. A few of our participants were able to get back to the media center. We had our first ever video call with them. So we are really looking forward to getting back to work, even if it's going to be some more months before we go in person. And I know, I mean, just all the guys have been so eager to get back in there and produce work and tell stories. And there's going to be a lot of stories to tell about this past year.
Oh, I bet. What was it like to have your first video call with them at Solano Prison?
It was really exciting, you know, and it felt revolutionary. We had never done that before COVID too. So I think in prisons across country, including in California, there's been a little more loosening of restrictions around technology during the pandemic. Video visits for family members and loved ones have also started in California. So it was exciting to see that the change, some positive change is coming out of this experience. That I think prison administrators acknowledge that connection is important, and that, you know, well, we can have video calls and we can do that for teachers, and we can do that for participants. So that alone was very exciting. It was a relief to see people, you know, who we've been thinking about but haven't been able to see at all. And yeah, I'm excited to get back to work.
I bet. We also want to acknowledge the more than 49,000 people who actually got COVID in California prisons. And Bun, you got COVID, and I understand that it was pretty bad. You had chills, headaches. We actually heard you on Uncuffed at a time when you were just really coughing uncontrollably. We could almost kind of hear just how hard it was. I could feel it almost, because it was such a horrible cough.
Yeah. 5 days before I was paroled, I started having symptoms, and I didn't want to tell myself that it was COVID. I was, because on the tier, a lot of younger guys, they had COVID, but they didn't know it either. They were like, oh, it's a 3-day flu. Like, I'll get sick for 3 days and be all right. And we were hearing that too. It was like, okay, it might be a flu that's coming in again, and you could catch either or. And I wrestled with myself and said, you know what, this is a 3-day flu. But in the back of my mind, I knew that it's COVID because of all the information I was getting in from the news. But I didn't understand it, because my symptom would come and go. I would have fevers at night and then will feel better in the morning. And I was like, okay, it might be a cold. But the closer I got to my parole date, I realized that this could be COVID. And it was sad, because I knew I was going to be picked up by immigration, by ICE. And I knew that if I went to ICE, I would die, because San Quentin showed me they didn't care. They were just waiting for us to call man down, to call for help. And a lot of older guys were doing that because they were sick. And I knew that the ICE detention is worse. They don't have medical, not even the little bit that CDCR has. So I prepared myself, and I didn't know how to say goodbye to my family. We didn't have phone calls. So the only, I didn't want to traumatize anybody with a letter saying, if anything happened to me, give this to my family. So I put it away. I put it in my property because I knew that's the only place, or that's the only thing that would be given to my family if I do pass. I try to prepare myself as much as I can for the ICE detention center. I was asking people for extra soap, any hand sanitizer that they could have got their hands on, or any bleach that they could have got their hands on. And I left them in little bottles in my carry pack for parole. The day came, and that morning came, I knew I was sick. I had a fever early that morning, and usually they wake you up around 3 o'clock for parole, but they didn't wake me up. Chow came, I didn't eat chow, I didn't eat breakfast at all. And I was like, oh, they took my date, and that was the worst thing that could ever happen. So around 9 o'clock, they told me, hey, you're going to be paroled today. But not, and I knew for immigrants like me, being paroled means being transferred to ICE. So they gave me about 5-10 minutes to say goodbye. And as I was running to everybody's cell, my friend's cell, I went to one of our producer, Tom Tran's cell, Edmund's cell, and a couple more of my friends, and they couldn't even get up. They're like, we're sick. Good luck. Usually when somebody parole, everybody's cheering, hugs, high fives, good luck. But this was the saddest thing I've seen. And all I could say to them was, I'll see you guys soon. And for the rest of the guys that I can make my rounds to, I yelled out, I'll see you guys soon. I'm leaving now. So when I walked down to get released, I was in my tank top, and that day it was cold, and people was wondering, why do you have your tank top on? But in my mind was, if I could cool my body down, I'll be a little bit okay. Cause I didn't know what else to do. I was not going to tell the nurse or anybody that I'm sick, because I don't want them to stop my release. Walking down there, I just act like I was normal. I didn't have a cough yet. It was just all fevers. When I was released, I didn't know I was released. Nobody knew. My family wasn't ready for my release. I was lost. After 23 years, I didn't know how to make a collect call right. They gave me a debit card that I didn't know how to use, and a bus pass that I didn't know what to do with. I finally got myself on a bus to San Francisco and finally attempted a collect call to my lawyer from Asian Law Caucus. And he somehow figured out that there's a national database of public phones, and he found out that ICE did not detain me, and I'm somewhere in Marin. And so when I jumped on the bus, I was hallucinating a little bit. I had motion sickness. I didn't know where I was going. So I just closed my eyes, and coming into the bus, they had these separators. I didn't even know where to sit. I had to ask people for everything, like, where do I sit? And the bus driver told me, just don't sit away from other people. There's tape around the spot you can't sit. I was lucky that a gentleman, I asked him, could you call my lawyer for me? And he put my lawyer on speaker, and I told him, I'm on such and such bus going to San Francisco. So my lawyer said, just go to the end of the line and get off. I go to the end of the line, and I had no more energy. I was overwhelmed. My temperature's getting higher and higher. I'm kind of seeing things, and it feels like a dream to me, because I didn't know, like, everything felt like a dream. Everything was moving too fast for me. The billing was too high. I'm getting dizzy. So I had no more energy to even open my eyes. I had to find a bench and go to sleep. And then even going to sleep, I was scared that an officer or someone will come wake me up and ask me, what am I doing? But my physical energy couldn't take it. I had to go to sleep. So by the time I got back up, it was like 15 minutes, and I saw some construction workers. And I asked them, could you call my lawyer for me? And they did. And they informed them where I was. So they helped me so much. They sat there. They waited till my lawyer called back. And they told me, walk up the street. They're looking for you up there. So I walk up the street, and they were right in front of me. I didn't even see them because my eyes were on the skyscrapers and the buildings. I don't know what's going on. And finally, the community found me. Asian Prison Support Committee, Nate, Ian, Sarah, Anoop, my lawyer, and some more people from the interfaith movement found me, and they're like, welcome home. I was like, thank you. All I could say was, thank you, I made it. They had a van ready for me with plastic to protect themselves. This was just in case ICE didn't pick me up. They just had a thought, like, maybe if they don't pick me up, we should be ready for him. And they were, because they knew that CDCR wasn't doing nothing for me. So they had a plan where I was isolated. Anoop took me to get tested right away. And it was like a 3-hour test result. It came back, I was positive. Now we know for sure I'm positive. And they take me to a sanctuary, because we don't know if ICE is still wanting to detain me. Once I got to the sanctuary, I mean, these people were so brave. They stayed their distance, but they still stayed there with me to make sure I was okay, because everything was so new to me. And I made a phone call to my mom, but she hung up on me because my voice had changed. My voice had changed, and she wasn't ready for me to come home, because I told her before they shut off all the phones that ICE is picking me up, Mom. I'm going to be detained and possibly deported. So she wasn't ready for me. She was ready for the call that, yes, I'm detained somewhere. And I called again. She hung up again. And then I called for a third time. She said, if you're my son, call your sister. Let your sister know. Then when she tells me, then I'll know for sure. So I had to call my sister and let her know that it was me.
Wow, I never heard that story.
Yeah. And Nina
was
brave.
This is unreal, Bun. This is unreal.
Yeah.
What you went through. Wow.
Yeah, it was an adventure that I remember a lot of it, but not too much of it because of all the hallucination I was getting. But Nina, when she called me, she's like, how are you doing? I know you're sick. And
this is another Uncuffed producer. Yeah, she runs the San Quentin side of the program, Nina Gensler Debs.
Yes, and he's like, Nina gave me so much information about COVID. She was just running information to me, and I was like, thank you, thank you, thank you. And right away, with all the support, Nina asked me, do you want to tell your story? I was like, yes, what they're doing to us in there is inhumane. They're killing us in there. They don't care, and but what they're telling the public is not true. I can tell you firsthand that it's not true. They're just waiting for us to fall out one at a time, and if we survive, we survive. The attitude I got from CDCR is, okay, we're shut program down. We'll give you a mask, but if you can't breathe, just call us, and if you die, you die. Nothing in place to stop COVID. They were still moving people around. Why they thought there was an outbreak in there. So it was spreading, and they were spreading. I didn't trust them. I didn't take a test even going to take the test inside of San Quentin seemed to me like they're spreading it too. They congregate us out in one spot, and there was about almost 100 people at a time just sitting there waiting to take a test. And the test, they had three seats, and everybody sitting side next to each other while they're doing the test. And I was like, that can't be safe. That's not what I'm seeing on the news and the report. So I refused the test.
Bun, I mean, this is just an incredible story, and thank you for sharing it. While you were talking, I was just thinking, I hope a filmmaker hears about your story so someone can make a documentary about what you have gone through. I mean, we're going to take a quick break, but if you're just tuning in, I mean, Bun served 23 years inside San Quentin, and you had COVID with these horrible conditions, chills, headaches, a horrible cough, and they did nothing to prepare you for what life would be like on the outside. I mean, it's really amazing just hearing your story. We have to take a quick break, but we'd love to continue. And I'd love to ask you, Eli, also, how common is this that people are not prepared at all for what happens when they leave prison after, in Bun's case, spending 23 years inside of San Quentin? Chanton Bun is also a producer with Uncuffed. He goes by Bun. We're also joined today by Eli Wertschafter, director of Uncuffed. That's KALW's audio journalism project created by people inside San Quentin and Solano State prisons. It's really an incredible journalism project, and you can find more information about it at yourcallradio.org. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are getting the latest from Uncuffed, KALW's audio journalism program in San Quentin and Solano prisons. 215 people have tragically died from COVID inside California's prisons. More than 49,000 people have contracted the disease. And we're joined today by Eli Wertschafter, director of Uncuffed. They won the 2020 award from the Society of Professional Journalists, Northern California, for best community journalism in radio and audio. And Chanton Bunn, who goes by Bunn, is a producer with Uncuffed. I hope that you were able to tune in before the break. Bunn was talking about what it was like when he got out of San Quentin after 23 years. He thought he was heading to ICE detention because he's a refugee from Cambodia, but ICE did not pick him up. So he is free right now, and he's with us to share his story. Bunn, I mean, it's amazing to think that after 23 years, so much has changed. I mean, you were talking about the buildings. I mean, I can't even imagine just the fast pace of San Francisco, the buses, just what it's like to be on the streets. Does the prison do anything for you before you are leaving to prepare you for what's to come?
In my situation, it's kind of different. In a lot of situations where we're immigrants, once we get a parole date, CDCR contacts ICE and let them know, like, hey, we have this guy here that's an immigrant, and you have a detainer on him. Would you like to come pick him up? And ICE would say yes, and they allow ICE to come into the facility to do interviews. And in my case, they came into the facility while there was an outbreak, and I thought the guy was crazy. I was like, and he took off his mask to talk to me. I was like, oh, you know, you're crazy. So with people like myself, once that's in process, they sort of don't care about it, because CDCR is like, oh, they're going to an ICE detention center. We don't really have to do nothing with them. And in my case, they did nothing. They didn't prepare me for nothing. Even my medical, knowing that there's COVID out, they didn't even finish my medical enrollment. I owe medical bills because I was sick of COVID from San Quentin, where they didn't finish my paperwork. Now I owe bills because I had to go to the hospital. So they don't prepare us for anything at all, really. Just go. And if it wasn't the blessing of my community, it wasn't for Asian Law Caucus, Asian Prisoner Support Committee, My Roots Family. That's a program that's in San Quentin. It was for Nina coming down, and like, she was super worried about me, and my community coming together to support me. I mean, like, they had food drop off. They organized checkups. When I was sick at night by myself, they take turns to call me on the hour to check my temperature, check my coughing. I was so sick where I couldn't move. They risked their life and put on protective equipment to come into the place I was staying, and like, put water around me, put food around me, and made sure I could eat, because I was so sick. I couldn't even get up to even use the bathroom without having a coughing episode, where I cough so much that sometimes I faint. So the community really rallied together and made sure that I survived this.
It's so incredible. Eli, given the experience you have with people on the inside, is this common that prisons just don't do much to let people know what to expect once they get out?
So, I mean, our program operates in partnership with CDCR, and it's not really my role to evaluate them or criticize what they're doing. All we try to do is give a platform so that the people inside can tell their own stories and tell it their own way. I'm not a journalist covering CDCR. I help run the program so that these guys can tell their stories. But what we have done, especially during COVID, is make sure that stories of people getting out during this time are being heard. So Bunn did a whole episode with us that I think you mentioned, in what we're calling our Unconfined mini series. And another of our producers, Joe Kirk, who is at Solano, also got COVID, a much less serious case, but he experienced this time of a lot of turmoil inside the institution, and then got out to a world on lockdown where it was hard to, you know, it's, I think he's still struggling to get his driver's license and, you know, track down a birth certificate. And these are the kind of issues that, and, you know, and without those things, it's hard for him to enroll in college. So these are the kind of issues that people coming out of prison face regularly. You know, no matter how well they've been, you know, how many rehabilitative classes or things like that they've been offered. And, you know, and there are many of those in CDCRs, and especially depending on the prison. But, you know, when you get out and the world is so inhospitable to returning residents, and it's so hard to just get your paperwork together. And then you add that to the pandemic where offices aren't open and people don't want to talk to you and people are afraid of touching you, especially coming out of prison. It really is a real challenge. So if you want to learn more about those stories, definitely recommend listening to the Unconfined episodes of Uncuffed with Bun and with Joe Kirk. And we actually have another one planned coming up with both of them that they're working on together to talk about, you know, a checkup almost a year since they've gotten out.
Yeah, and you can find links at yourcallradio.org. If you have any questions for Eli or Bun about what is happening inside California's prisons and the power of telling these stories of people on the inside telling their own stories and their friends and family's stories, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Bun, can you talk about the power of telling your own story on the inside? Given that Uncuffed has received so much acclaim from across the country, a lot of people are listening to these pieces. They want to know more. They want the personal side of this rather than just the numbers. Well, can you just talk about what that experience has been like for you?
That experience is humbling, and I'm honored to be part of it. I know a lot of families that have people that are incarcerated and worry, because for 4 months, there was no phone calls and the letters were so slow. And like, if you listen to the radio story that KLW did, you could see from the family, like, I haven't heard from you. We're worried about you. And me telling my story, because I was there for those absenting months that they couldn't contact their loved ones. I was like their message, like, this is what's going on with your loved ones in there. This is the condition they live in. Even though that it's not good news, but there's some news. You know, there's some news of how they're living and you know. So I hope that my story could convey a little bit of easiness in their mind of not knowing. So I'm just honored that I could be a vessel to let the loved ones and the family know that what's going on in prison, and I wanted the public to know what's going on, so the public could not just see the numbers. Oh, here's a 10 people today that passed away. Here's a couple hundred that got COVID. And, you know, without the stories, they're just numbers in people's mind. And I'm blessed and honored to be able to tell the stories and humanize everybody that's incarcerated.
Mm-hmm. Bun is really humble, but it's a lot of work to tell these stories. It's emotional work to tell your own story. And I hear the way you're bearing the stories of the people who have passed and the people who are still inside. And I just really want to honor that and how much that takes. And even the personal risks that might be involved. You're putting your name out there while your immigration status is still in jeopardy, because you so believe in the power of your story.
Eli, can you tell us more about the process involved? And you're right. A lot of people are being very vulnerable by telling their story and then, you know, putting their names to their pieces.
Yeah. Do you mean the process involved, you know, during normal times or how we've been doing stories?
Yeah, let's do normal times and then since the pandemic.
Sure. So in usual times, we go in and visit both prisons, San Quentin and Solano, about once a week. We've got a group of producers in there, producers in training. We teach them the ins and outs of making audio stories from the very beginning to the end. So from pitching a story and pre-interviewing people they want to talk to, finding out what story they want to tell, to doing the interview, recording it on their own, and then going through and editing it, doing the same things we do at KALW and at Cross Currents, where I was a member of the Audio Academy, learning how to take a 40-minute, maybe 2-hour interview and turn it into maybe an 8-minute piece that really has the soul of the story in it. And so we come in and we work on that with them. We've got computers in there. They're using industry standard Pro Tools equipment. And then the story to come out has to be cleared by a public information officer at the prison. But you know, usually they don't censor us. They don't have a lot of issues with what we put out. But we do have to go through that. And then on our side, we, you know, touch up the engineering, maybe add a little music. But as much as possible, we really try to center the stories the way they want to tell it and the way the reporters want to do the stories. And then they go out on KALW and they go out in our podcast, Uncuffed.
And I remember the last time we had you on with some people behind on the inside, and they talked about how powerful it was for them to share their story. In some cases, they haven't shared this information in many, many years, if at all. And they also talked about how powerful it is for their families to hear these stories.
Yeah, that's something we hear over and over, is people who whose families, even if they're connected to their families are often hearing them tell stories that they haven't been able to hear directly, whether that's because of, you know, they're on these short 15-minute phone calls and there's so much to go through and the room is loud and busy and people are listening in. And it's also the way that the producers inside know the right questions to ask and actually have, in many cases, developed so much intimacy over the years of knowing a person and growing vulnerable and comfortable with each other. So people are sharing stories that they're not even telling directly to their families, and that connects their families to them. And then there's people who are not connected to all their family members, but those family members end up hearing the stories in one way or another. Maybe someone who's a little more connected sends it to them, or they get a piece of mail, or maybe they just hear about it some other way. And we've had quite a few people who are interviewed in our stories and who are producers in our program say, hey, you know, my brother got in touch with me who I haven't heard from in 25 years, or wow, I got to talk to my mom for the first time in decades. Mm. And it's because, you know, unfortunately families get torn apart with incarceration, and there's a lot of distrust and misunderstanding, and you know, there could be blame on both sides for that, but often relationships are broken, and when people are able to tell their stories and someone can listen in a quiet, private way, I think it really creates an opportunity for family members to say, you know what, this person isn't who I thought he was 20 years ago.
Wow. That is so powerful. Bun, how did your family respond when the story that you were involved with, coming to terms with his trauma, one man reflects on a war-torn childhood? We don't have time to play this clip because we have to end in about 5 minutes, but you were born in Cambodia in the 1970s, and at least 1 million people tragically died during that regime. But your family managed to escape to a Thai refugee camp and then eventually were resettled in the United States. So how did your family respond when they heard the piece about your childhood and your experience?
I mean, when my family heard that piece, I have 4 sisters, 2 sons, and they're all born here. And they hear stories from my mom and they're like, ah. And, you know, them hearing that story over and over, they never heard it from me. So when they heard it, they're like, oh my God, brother, you went through a lot. And even coming out here, they have kids now. They're like, I can't even imagine my kids going through what you went through. It's horrible. And it let them understand me more. I mean, they love me to death, but we, like Eli said, we don't have that intimate connection. Like, we can't just talk on the phone 15 minutes and get these stories out and or write in a letter or in visiting. So when they heard it, they're like, wow, brother, you went through that. Now we really see our mom, what she went through. And it just touches them. They never heard that side of me. Because, you know, when we have our 15 minutes, we're not telling sad stories. We're, how you doing? How's your day? How's the kids? And when we get visits, all, let's, you know, hug and enjoy our time together. So when we like, even all the other producers with me, Ton, Edmund, Greg, we tell stories from deep in our hearts and our emotion. And these are the stories our family haven't heard. These are stories our loved ones have never heard. And then we give them our feelings, our emotions, and we don't talk that regularly, but when we're together, we talk like that because we're trying to let the audience know, let the people know that we're human too. We want to express that, you know, this is what we felt, this is what we went through, and this is how we learned from it. And that's why all our Uncuffed podcast, the conversation is so deep at the end, because every one of us go through the same thing, but we felt differently and we connect like that. So our family appreciated. They've never heard us, like, some of them have never even seen us cry, and they heard us cry on the podcast, and they're like, wow.
Well, I hope you can take the time to listen to that piece. It's at yourcallradio.org. We have an email from a listener who says, thank you so much for telling these stories. And the listener wants to know, Bun, do you plan to continue exposing what really happens on the inside? And what are you doing now?
Yes, I do plan to. I have a fellowship with the Yuri Fellowship with ALC, Asian Law Caucus, and I speak up on immigration rights, on criminal justice reform. I support our returning citizens with whatever they need to navigate them through, like getting a license or you know, getting their ID, getting a bus pass, getting a bike, whatever it is. I try to help out and give back to my incarcerated family. A lot of people don't know, but we do have a second family because we grew up with everybody in there. And for me, being released now, it's bittersweet for me because I'm leaving my family.
We only have about a minute left. Eli, what is next for Uncuffed? It's great to hear that people at Solano State are able to use the equipment. What's next for San Quentin and Uncuffed?
Well, we're still going to be at the mercy of the pandemic and seeing how the rules changed. But we have some great episodes coming out soon. We recorded over the phone, people talking about a song that's helped them get through the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And that will be coming out within the next couple of weeks. And, you know, now that we have producers at Solano, they're going to be telling stories about what it was like to have video visits for the first time. And even stories they were working on back in, you know, February 2020 that they just didn't have time to finish. And we got letters from people like, hey, can you please let me go to the media center so that I can, I can wrap up this story. I just want to get this out there. And, you know, unfortunately we couldn't do that. But now I think there's going to be a big blossoming of energy as people are telling stories they've been holding on to for a year.
Eli Wirtschafter is director of Uncuffed, KALW's audio journalism project created by people inside San Quentin and Solano State prisons. Eli, thank you so much for joining us again. And again, congratulations on the well-deserved award.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you. Chanton Bunn is a producer with Uncuffed. He served 23 years inside San Quentin and was paroled on July 1st after contracting COVID inside the prison. He is now free and is here to share his story. Bunn, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your stories. And once we are able to go back into the studio, we would love to have you in to continue the conversation and to find out how you're doing.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. And I hope you can take some time to listen to Uncuffed and share it with some friends. It really is an incredible audio journalism project. YourCallRadio.org. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.